Chapter 48 From the Author. After 6 years of work, merciless toward myself, and with almost continuous tense mentation, yesterday I at last finished putting down on paper, in a form I think accessible to everybody, the first of the three series of books I intended to write, and in which I had decided to develop a whole body of ideas, which would permit me to accomplish, first in theory and then in practice, by means I had previously thought out, three essential tasks I had set myself. By means of the first series, to destroy in people everything that in their false representations appears to exist in reality, or, in other words, to sweep away without mercy all the rubbish accumulated in human mentation over the ages. By means of the second series, to prepare new constructional material. And by means of the third, to build a new world. Having now finished the first series of books, and following the practice established on earth long ago of never concluding any such great undertaking without what some call an epilogue, others an afterword, still others from the author, and so on, I shall now propose to write something of the kind. With this in view, I read over very attentively this morning the preface I wrote 6 years ago, entitled The Arousing of Thought, in order to take suitable ideas from it for what might be called a corresponding logical fusion of that beginning with this conclusion I am now about to write. While reading that first chapter, which I wrote only 6 years ago, but which gave me the sensation of having been written long, long ago, a sensation that is now in my common presence, undoubtedly because during those years I had to think intensely and even, as might be said, to experience all the material required for 8 thick volumes. As not for nothing is it stated in that branch of genuine science called the Laws of Association of Human Mentation, which has come down from very ancient times and is known to only a few contemporary people, that the sensation of the flow of time is directly proportional to the quality and quantity of the flow of thoughts. Well then, while I was reading that first chapter, which, as I said, I had thought about deeply from every aspect and experienced almost exclusively under the action of my voluntary self-mortification, and which, moreover, I had written at a time when the functioning of my entire whole, a functioning that engenders in a man what is called the power to manifest himself by his own initiative, was utterly disharmonized, that is, when I was still extremely ill from the effects of an accident that had occurred to me not long before, consisting in a charge and crash of my automobile at full speed into a tree standing silently, like an observer and reckoner of the disorderly passage of centuries, on the historic road between the world capital of Paris and the town of Fontainebleau. A charge which, according to any sane human understanding, should have put an end to my life. Well then, from reading that chapter, there arose in me a quite definite decision. Recalling my state during the writing of that first chapter, I cannot help adding here, owing to a small weakness of mine, that always causes me to experience an inner satisfaction when I see on the faces of our estimable contemporary representatives of exact science that very specific smile peculiar to them alone, that although after this accident my body was so battered and everything in it so disordered that for months it presented a general picture which might be described as a piece of live meat in a clean bed, my correctly disciplined spirit, as it would usually be called, despite the physical state of my body, was not in the least depressed, as it should have been, according to their notions. On the contrary, its power was even increased by the intense excitation that had been aroused in it just before the accident, by my repeated disappointment in people, particularly in those who devote themselves to what they call science, and by the disillusion caused me by that ideal, which had gradually been formed in my common presence, thanks chiefly to a commandment inculcated in me in my childhood, which affirms that the highest aim and sense of human life is the striving for the welfare of one's neighbor, and that this is attainable only through the conscious renunciation of one's own. And so, after I had attentively read over that opening chapter of the first series, written in the conditions just described, and had recalled by association the texts of the many succeeding chapters, which, according to my conviction, are bound to produce in the consciousness of the readers non-habitual impressions that always, as he said, engender substantial results, I, or rather that something dominant in my common presence that now represents the sum of the results issuing from the data crystallized during my life, data which, among other things, engender in a man who has set himself the aim of mentating actively and impartially during his responsible existence, the ability to penetrate and understand the psyche of people of various types, I decided, in concluding this first series of my writings, and urged by the impulse called love of kind that arose in me at that moment, to limit myself to appending the first of a considerable number of my lectures that were read publicly during the existence of the establishment I had founded under the name of the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man. That institute, by the way, no longer exists, and I find it both necessary and opportune, chiefly in order to pacify certain types in various corners of the world, to declare categorically here and now that I have liquidated it completely and forever. It was with an impulse of inexpressible grief and despondency that I was constrained to make the decision to liquidate this institute, and also everything organized and carefully prepared for the opening the following year of 18 branches in different countries, in short, to abandon everything I had previously created with almost superhuman labor, chiefly because about 3 months after the aforementioned accident, when the functioning of my usual mentation had been more or less reestablished, although my body was still quite powerless, I realized that the attempt to preserve the existence of this institute, in the absence of real people around me, and the impossibility of procuring, without my help, the enormous material means required, would inevitably lead to a catastrophe that would result for me in my old age, as well as for many others, wholly dependent on me, in a condition of half-starved vegetation. The lecture I propose to add as a conclusion to this first series was read more than once during the existence of the Institute by my pupils of the first rank, as they were then called. Certain of them, by the way, as it later turned out, to my sincere regret, showed a predisposition in their essence to the swift transformation of their psyche into the psyche called Chasnamusian, a predisposition that soon became evident and clearly discernible to all more or less normal persons around them. When, at the moment of inevitable crisis due to my accident, in everything I had thus far accomplished, they, fearing for their skins, that is, fearing to lose their personal welfare, which, by the way, I had created for them, deserted the common work, and with their tails between their legs, took themselves off to their kennels, where, profiting by the crumbs fallen from my, so to say, idea table, they opened what I would call their Schachermacher workshop booths, and with a secret feeling of hope and perhaps even of joy at their speedy and complete release from my vigilant control, began manufacturing out of various unfortunate, naive people candidates for lunatic asylums. I have chosen this particular lecture because when I first began to spread the ideas I wished to introduce into the life of people, it was specially composed here in Europe to serve as the introduction, or as it were, threshold, to the complete series of lectures, the totality of which alone can make clear in a form accessible to everybody the necessity and even the unavoidable obligation of putting into practice the immutable truths I have elucidated and established in half a century of active work, day and night, and also to prove that it is actually possible to employ these truths for the welfare of people. And furthermore, I chose this lecture because, happening to be present at the large gathering where it was last read publicly, I made an addition to it, which fully corresponds to the hidden thought introduced by Mr. Beelzebub himself into his, so to say, concluding chord, an addition which, by illuminating once more that supreme objective truth, will, in my opinion, enable the reader to perceive and assimilate it as befits a being who claims to be made in the image of God.